Start.
All right. I guess we can start. And the idea of authorship, I think, is something that we're going to have to deal with. But it basically is the requirements are clearly stated of what's required for authorship. And there's a thing put out by the medical journal editors. And I sent everybody that and then the link to the full document that they have. And it said that authorship credit should be based on substantial contributions to conception and design, or acquisition of data, or analysis and interpretation of data. That drafting the article or revising it critically for important intellectual content, and three, final approval of the version to be published. And authors have to meet all of three of those criteria. Further down, it says that acquisition of funding, collection of data, or general supervision of the research group alone does not justify authorship. So basically, this is a policy that's been endorsed by NIH. I also sent the authorship requirements from the NIH Intramural Research Division, which is essentially fairly similar, in which it says that authorship should be based on a significant contribution to conceptualization, design, execution, or interpretation of the research study, as well as a willingness to assume responsibility for the study. Individuals who do not meet these criteria but who have assisted the research by their encouragement and advice, by providing space, financial support, reagents, occasional analysis, or patient material should be acknowledged in the text but not be authors. So basically, we have the criteria set out before us, and I think that, you know, there's obviously going to be problems in interpreting the role of each individual, and but the requirements are there. So I think what we need to focus on is how we're going to deal with the possibility of large numbers of authors on papers, and the best way to deal with that, and to protect the investigator's interest, but also make sure that we can get papers published in respectable places so that the participants who have been involved in this research, we can show them that their time and efforts were worth something and that we publish the data. So I think we just need to focus on that part of how we want to identify the group or the participants, the researchers involved in the study. And I sent out the three comments that I received from individuals involved in the consortium, and everyone should have gotten those. But that's all I've gotten, so I'd be interested in hearing from others. Ken, is there anything that I've left out of those NIH?
I don't have it open in front of me, but I think you have the gist of it right there.
Okay. Any other comments or considerations right now? Anything that I might have left out that someone would like included? Very quiet. All right, so one possibility, and, you know, I think that there's going to have to be a procedure, a protocol, someone, a guidance committee or whatever, to look at papers being proposed by members of the consortium where the data was collected under the consortium guidelines and funding. But there are going to be some papers that come out from individual groups, and this was spelled out in the publication policy, which you all have a copy of and which is available on the web. You know, and I think if the data are coming out from a particular group and involves data that they collected at their site that was unrelated to the consortium but collected within the same testing protocol or whatever, that we don't really have a problem. Some sites collected additional data that was not proposed in the original consortium, and I don't think we have issues with any of that. I think where we run into problems is where projects were done at each individual site, and how we want to deal with authorships from those particular papers, where multiple sites are being involved and perhaps multiple cores are going to be involved. And one thing that I sent around was how other consortium deal with this in terms of publishing as a group. And that may either be simply a group, it's the Framingham Project, or it may involve a few responsible authors, and then something such as the CIAFSD, and then an acknowledgement section acknowledging all the people who would qualify for authors because of either data collection or significant input, as well as looking over the manuscript and having some intellectual input into it, or dealing with it on, everyone says who should be an author from their particular site. So I'd appreciate comments.
I think that it would be very important now to have an overview of the planned articles, what will be written about all this data, of the core data. Then it's easier to sort of see what our data will be used for. And if we think about shared authorship, or that it's only one or two authors per site, it's easier to look at the whole picture when you know which articles are going to be written on your data, if it's five or three or one or 10, whatever.
Right. I'm assuming that the first real multiple site papers that we will have to deal with are going to involve the dysmorphology core and the facial imaging core. I think those will be the first ones that have sufficient and reasonable data to get in print. And then I think the neurobehavioral assessments will follow shortly, since I think that there's a real impetus to get those papers to analyze the data and to get any significant findings into the literature. So the 3D camera and the dysmorphologists have basically been to every site. The 3D camera has been in Finland, Buffalo, San Diego, and South Africa. So I would think that they're going to be the first ones that come out of it. I know Ken's already working on data, primarily a matter of straightening out some data input concerns that we had here. But I'm hoping that those things will be ready by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, here in San Diego, there have been several people involved in the 3D imaging. I know in South Africa that there are several people involved. In Finland, there are several people involved. The facial imaging group has at least two, if not more, people that have been involved. And in Buffalo, there were two or three people involved. So if we multiply that, we're looking at a paper that has about between 15 and maybe 20 authors.
Maybe we should first address the issue about whether that's necessarily a bad thing. It is conceivable that one would hit a journal where that would be an issue, but my impression is that in the large majority of journals and in many different disciplines, that's not an issue. And so I would propose that if it's not an issue for the journal and we have 15 people who have made substantial contributions and all of whom are willing to read and give feedback on the draft and acknowledge, take responsibility for what's in the draft, I don't see that 15 authors should necessarily be considered a barrier if that's really what it took to make the paper happen in a very fundamental sense.
Other comments?
I totally agree with this comment that came. I would also appreciate, because I don't know you by just by the voice.
I'm sorry, that was Joe Jacobson.
That's Joe Jacobson.
Yeah, thank you. If you could say your name.
Yeah, this is Ken Warren. I don't see a problem with a paper that has 15 authors as long as it truly is the case that everybody meets the criteria that have been set out by the editors of medical journals. I mean, if they truly all meet those criteria and the journal accepts it. But I think there are some other issues to be looked at here as well, and that's that, I think, you know, as I stated it, that is one of the issues we have right there. But the other, the other issue here also relates to the extent of involvement that an individual has. When a person has devoted a very large, substantial part of their time, when they're really responsible for 85 or 90% of the work that was done, and they're on a paper that has 15 authors, depending upon the stage of the career that they're at. I mean, if they're senior and full professors, it probably doesn't hurt them. If they're assistant professors looking for tenure, it does hurt them. And, I think some of these judgments are going to have to be made on some of these papers. And it's just going to have to be considered on a case-by-case basis.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I agree with you, Ken. This is Sandy Jacobson. I think, you know, that somebody comes and writes a paper, and you can say, well, they just spent a lot of time analyzing and writing that paper, but that each of the sites should be represented by key investigators who have contributed, because the number of hours and time and effort to put together the cohort, design the study, get the people there, investment in the analyses, training people. There is an enormous amount of time and effort that's gone in.
Okay.
And I don't think, you know, that a junior faculty person suffers if they're part of a prestigious group.
I
have reviewed many articles and been on review panels, and that has never been, in my opinion, the case.
Yeah. Well, I know here at NIH, maybe it's just much more competitive in the intramural program, but those are factors that are weighed. But I'm not saying that it's not the case. What I'm saying that is it really has to be looked at on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I think the problem there, Ken, is that people then have submitted all their work, and who is making the case-by-case decisions after the fact and after the data have been pooled and a person no longer has any real, you know, say about how this decision is made, and if it's made because a person is an assistant, you know, a junior faculty person, that doesn't seem to me to follow.
Well, I think there's...
I think it's the... You know, this is Ken again. I think basically that decision is made by CFAS itself. It's the, you know, it's the... it's either the steering committee or the publications committee of CFAS. I mean, I have some familiarity with the COGA, which is past its 15th year. It's about in its 16th or 17th year, and has many publications. The process has worked well for them. They really do have a publication committee. I've never heard any protest from an individual saying that they should have been on a paper that they were not. And we stay in fairly close contact with that particular group. It's decided by that group, and it depends upon who's taking the data and who's doing the analysis and who is involved in actually gathering it. And
those are all factors.
Yeah, they're all factors. I mean, right? They're every single one of them is factors.
Yeah, I think the journal editors, the medical journal editors, have a statement, and some of their wording is confusing because, for example, they say, in order to get authorship, substantial contributions to conception and design or acquisition of data or analysis and interpretation of the data. That's one of the conditions for authorship. But down below, it says acquisition of funding, collection of data, or general supervision of the research group alone does not justify authorship.
Right, because they need you. They also want you to have a substantial input in what's actually written in the paper. In other words,
right.
We want to feel that we acknowledge the role of the groups that actually had to make the investment to make the data happen in these very remote and difficult areas. We as a group can choose to do that by giving each group that contributes data to a paper an opportunity to play some role in the writing of that paper, and we've met the medical standards as I understand them.
Right, but I think, again, it's probably going to have to be assumed under a case-by-case basis, but I can foresee, for example, the 3D facial imaging or the facial recognition, where basically I'd feel foolish trying to contribute to that paper. I can't even understand the eigenvalues that went into the proposal. And, you know, I'm not sure what great scientific input I could have into that. Or what other sites anyone at those sites would have to it. I mean, that's an area of expertise that I think is only contained within that 3D facial imaging core.
Well, I disagree with you, Ed.
I just want to finish with one thing. According, again, to the medical journal editors, that groups of persons who have contributed material to the paper but whose contributions do not justify authorship may be listed under a heading such as clinical investigators, participating investigators, and their function or contribution described. For example, served as scientific advisors, critically reviewed the study proposal, collected data, or provided and cared for study patients. And they're the examples that they give.
Ed, I
feel, this is Sandy, that we just came back from Cape Town. It's an example, and you saw that I agree that I may not understand the technology or some of the eigen values and so forth, but I don't think that Elizabeth Moore or anyone would deny the tremendous effort and participation that was necessary to get our whole cohort there to have the number of children seen in the short period of time that she at the time felt in full agreement that a major contribution had been made and that it did not, it's not just a thank you. This was more than acknowledgement, but a very heavy collaboration and participation in getting that done, getting the materials there, getting the people there.
Well, the other aspect of it, Ed, is that scientifically there's the whole issue about evaluation of the exposure to alcohol and other relevant control variables that some of the facial imaging people aren't going to know.
Right, I agree on that.
People at the local site are going to be the ones providing the scientific expertise needed to write a scientifically cogent paper. The paper is imaging in relation to alcohol exposure in a particular cultural context, et cetera, et cetera. So it isn't just simply people knowing the technology that are needed to write the appropriate paper here.
This is Fred. Can I jump in here?
Ed, I just wanted to go ahead and throw in, because back, you know, a few minutes ago when you went ahead and said that there appears to be a conflict, some sort of a contrast in the editors, in the policy that they set forth. The distinction that they have there is in the first, they draw a distinction between acquisition of data and collection of data. It's the difference between acquisition and collection. And, conceptually I have an understanding of what that is. I'm not sure everybody would agree with my understanding. But and I won't go into great detail to try to describe the difference, because I think most people know that. But I think it really comes down to the judgment, and I don't want to cite any example because I just don't think it's appropriate to do it right now, that acquisition and, you know, involves some sort of intellectual effort, including intellectual effort in terms of gathering the population, whereas data collection is, you know, is clearly a step below that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Fred, you wanted to?
Yeah, there's a...
Can you speak up? You're real low.
Actually, I don't know where our microphone is. So is it? Am I better now?
Yes.
Okay. There's the possibility of slightly increasing the number of papers so that the people who participated in what you would call designing a really clever data collection become the authors of a paper doing that. Many of the large-scale projects that I've been on in the past, especially in craniofacial biology, have intentionally constructed a paper early in the history of the project to pull in all of the people who weren't just doing their jobs well, but inventing their jobs as they went along, the computer programmers, the people who would now be in the course. And that was a specific paper that was about the technology of doing a large-scale project. Those people would then be acknowledged in later papers, but they would have gotten their authorship in a discussion of specifically what they did creatively. And that might be a possibility that we would consider here, a paper from each core talking about the things that they've done quite cleverly and creatively that would, again, that be cited in the other work and the authors of which would be acknowledged in the other work. That, in some sense, splits the difference here by giving them a place to talk where they're doing what Sandy or Joe was saying, making major intellectual contributions at a stage that is specific to the work of the data collection, the computer facilities, and so on. So unbundling the papers might be a step toward resolving this disagreement.
Well, I'm not sure there's a disagreement. I think we're just trying to figure a way to handle it. I was
impressed with what Ken Warren said about acquisition. I thought that that was very helpful.
That's very helpful. And I also think, Ed, that about interpretation of the data, it shouldn't be left only to the methodologies. We all who have worked for decades with fetal alcohol syndrome, we are all very familiar with their dysmorphic features and the genetic differences. So I have no problems in trying to understand the analysis and trying to figure out what it truly says and whether there is something I should add to the final analysis.
No, in many respects that will certainly be true, and I didn't mean to disparage anyone of not being able to do that, but for example, the 3D facial computer imaging people, not just taking the measurements, but they're going to take cases of FAS and see if the computer can correctly classify as FAS or non-FAS.
Mm.
And they're going to have the clinical diagnosis and pictures or algorithms of these pictures. And I don't think that anyone on this phone conversation, with the exception of maybe Fred, would understand the mathematics involved.
But I think if they're to write a good paper, Ed, they're going to want to understand the cases that failed this analysis, and they're going to want to work hand-in-hand with senior people from the field who can give them other relevant information about how those that were correctly predicted may have differ from those that were not correctly predicted, for example.
And that may be. I mean,
I think there should be that opportunity for the people in the projects who provided the data to work collaboratively with the people in the cores, and I think, you know, we're going to get better papers.
We saw some papers where, you know, the data were just provided and analyzed by a group that didn't really understand the problems with the alcohol ascertainment, and they did not get effects because they didn't know when women had actually denied, when women later said other things that changed the group that they should have been assigned to. That it's a lot more complicated and ought to be done hand in hand, I think, on each site, speaking with the critical people involved.
Let me ask this. What's the sentiments about having this group authorship? as just saying a consortium. On some papers where the number of people who would be involved would bring the authorships easily into the 20s or 30s. I mean,
I'm wondering whether, you know, I mean, we have to think about how many sites we're talking about in any given paper, and whether when you also add the requirement that people have to be willing and interested to play a scientific role in on the manuscript to get, you know, get their comments and input back in a timely fashion and so forth. I'm dubious that it's going to go into the 20s or 30s.
Well, in any dysmorphology paper, there are already four dysmorphologists involved in assessing all the cases. All right? On the facial, 3D facial imaging, Elizabeth, I don't know how many people would be there, but I'm assuming probably about four.
Yeah, at least Jeff and I for sure, than any site that we went to.
Right, and Tatiana.
Yeah, but if you then only have a couple of people per site, let's say the PI and the, another key person from that site that that person delegates and feels should be represented, I think that they should be included. I think that
That's nine people there, and if there are if there are seven sites, each with two, that's 14. And so we have 23 authors, and that's only with two per site. And there are many things. If it's going to be arbitrary that a PI and can pick one other person, that's kind of ignoring the rules of what's required.
Well, maybe it wouldn't be one per person on each site. I mean, you said that there would be some individual basis on which you would be doing this, but I think to prematurely cut off and say it'll be just as a group or these, the two really key first papers to be coming out of what was a huge group effort, will not include many of the people who have, you know, many of us who have contributed heavily would be very unfortunate, not demoralizing.
This is Andy Aronson from the Informatics Corps. I actually was an author on the, I believe it was a science paper that dealt with the human genome being published. This guy was one of about 150 authors.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my point about that is that I kind of liked what somebody, I think it was Fred, said earlier about if there's a way to target some of the people like myself who are doing creative work but perhaps not being deeply involved in later analysis with individual papers, and then somehow including a consortium, broad-based consortium acknowledgement of everybody's effort on later papers that are made possible by earlier papers, then I think that you get to give people credit for their creative work, but also acknowledge the usefulness of their previous work for the analysis.
Any other? Andy, was that paper 150 sole authors, or was it published as the group?
You know, what I remember is that there was a whole page in the magazine that was nothing but authors' names.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it was an acknowledgement. I mean, when publishing is a group, it acknowledges that everybody in that group is an author. I mean, that's not an issue. It just doesn't list them all. But they all say that in order to be in that section, you need to meet all of the requirements for authorship. But it won't show up on Science Citation Index under your name.
Well, I'll take a moment to check PubMed and see what it tells me.
Okay.
I mean, why don't you start with the thing that you will be as inclusive as possible, and only later, if this runs into a problem, will you be exclusionary? I mean, why not start with an attitude that really is inclusive and welcomes a number of people who feel that they should be recognized?
and want to contribute to the written draft. I mean, I think the issue, another way to think about it is, will SciFads have a policy where whenever data is being used from a particular site in a paper, then representatives from the group that provided those data, you know, scientists from that group, will have the opportunity to join as co-authors in the writing and publication of the paper. Maybe that's another way to
think about it. If they play a critical part in the acquisition of the data.
Mm.
The data being studied or going to be published, or the data in general?
The data being studied in the paper.
The data to be published in the paper. In other words, if the facial imaging core is putting together a paper, and the paper depends on its existence on contributions of data from particular sites, that representatives, the PI, will be asked to either participate or designate a collaborator who would participate in the putting together of that paper.
What if it just involved the photo and no other data other than the dysmorphologist diagnosis of FAS, no FAS, and the photo?
I think you wouldn't have either of those if the people on site, if we hadn't traveled back and forth,
right,
developed relationships, bringed in the cohort, hired the people, trained them,
and worked very hard to do it. I think
that the alcohol is going to be in the paper.
Sandy,
I want to remind that at least Finland was not funded at all for the dysmorphology part. So we really did that part totally from our own flesh, on our own free time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really unfair not to be included.
Absolutely.
In that part. We also had to have partly pay for people to come to interpret during the sessions, because the children couldn't speak English. So it was a huge effort for us.
But everyone there then is also willing to take responsibility for the scientific credibility of those data.
Definitely. At least I'm. And it's very delicate material how that will be dealt with. It's the only material where the children truly are identifiable.
I think everybody needs to make sure you understand that what Ed's talking about is the facial identification, and that's the stuff that Xiaofen and Jeffrey Wong are doing, and it is more like what Dr. Brookstein does. It's all mathematical, and it's a lot more complicated than just taking measurements. And most of you guys don't even know them, and they don't know you. They don't know anywhere, they don't even know where these sites are. They don't know where the data is being collected from. So that's sort of a problem on their end.
And the problem is that, well, not a problem, but just to remind you that the statement from the International Journal Letters is that providing and caring for study patients is not a material contribution to authorship.
Yeah, but that's a clinical thing. They mean people who are like the clinicians.
I don't know what...
Who are caring for the patients are different than active researchers who are working only to collect this data and to, you know, and they're not talking about the testing that day. They're talking about the prime players should be included. That's very different than the clinical care of a patient.
Right, and I have absolutely no problem with the prime players being included. I'm trying to figure out a way to address the problems that we may have in with when we have 25 paper authors on a paper, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of sentiment for publishing as a group. You know, Xiaofeng, Jeffrey Wong, and the CIAFSD. And yet I think that would give them the legitimacy that their work's going to entail, you know, with this stuff that basically very few people are ever going to understand who help collect the actual images. But yet they'd still be acknowledged as an author.
Yeah, but I've been involved, like the MRS study we did. This part I can't understand what the chemist has done. So it's always nowadays with imaging studies that there are parts where you need a specialist to to know about metabolites and how to measure their ratios. So there are nowadays always parts in huge articles, novel articles, that not all people involved understand totally.
Right, but
so the concerns about recognition are also dealt with by order of authorship, so that the key people who have done the facial imaging analyses get listed first, and people understand that that's to acknowledge their role in this critical aspect of the paper.
Right. I think on every paper that should be a priority, is that the people who played the major responsibility, and they'll be easy to identify, should be the first authors. And I think if, if the policy is that everyone wants to list their name, what we're going to do is we'll send off what each person did to the editor. And because many journals, or some journals now, require that. And
I don't think we should do it if it's not required. I think this should be a decision that's made within the group, not something that we then farm out to somebody else to decide for us.
Well, they're not deciding, but I think we're going to have to state, what
role
everybody...
If asked, we state, but otherwise I don't see any reason to be stating something like that. Not usual practice.
I just worry about the fact that being the 25th author on a paper, whether that's really that important and whether it will diminish the impact of the first 3, 5, or 7 authors. I think the data I sent around, the average number of authors in a medical journal now is between 3 and 4. And we'd be increasing that substantially. And I sent around that one funny thing where they won the Nobel Prize because they had more authors than they had pages. And I wouldn't want our work to get looked at in that context.
The best thing would be, Ed, if there's a sincere effort to really make sure that people who have made major effort and contribution in one form or another are on there. And whether they're 10th or they're 15th, I think is hardly the thing if it matters to the people that they work their asses off to collect stuff and analyze it, and design it, and participate. And I would prefer to go with that and give it a try and see how it flies, then start with an exclusionary policy or limiting to 3 or 4 people who happen to be, the ones who analyze the paper at the end and don't recognize, I just don't see that that's necessary.
Is there any not support, but does anyone share my feeling that having 25 authors might be looked at as a negative?
I share that. This is Fred.
Yeah, I just worry about it that we're going to diminish our scientific credibility rather than enhance it.
I don't believe in that. It's a multinational, multi-center study.
Right. And
most it really gives emphasis on that this information would not have been able to be reached without such a great investment. I don't see that truly not as a handicap for the
Can people send me examples of multinational or multi-site studies listing that many authors? And
Ed, why don't you do it the other way? You're getting a consensus that except for Fred, most of the people were, not feeling upset about this. It doesn't necessarily going to amount to 25 authors. It depends how many sites are involved in analysis. Why don't you go with first trying it out this way? It may not be as many people as you anticipate. And apparently there have been, articles in Science even with so many authors.
If people can send me examples of those from multi-site, multi-project,
okay,
where there are lots and lots of authors, and then compare that to one's publishing as a group. And most of the journal things I sent around acknowledge now that these group and multi-site studies are becoming much more common and are being published as a group. So if we have current examples from the recent, last year or so, of these large multi-authored papers. If I had some other examples, I could find an occasional paper with 20 something authors on it, but they're not common. But
the multi-site studies aren't that common either. I can send you two, not in the last year, but two of the most influential papers in the PCB field have 20 plus authors. I mean, when you really need to get groups from multiple sites to pool data together and to work together to answer a question, I agree with Lona that this is it's more impressive to see how many people it took to make the thing happen.
Well, what I'd like are current examples, because this idea of the group authorship has really only come out in the last year or so in many of these journals. I think the previous JAMA report didn't mention it, and then this one in 1995 does. And thanks for sending that, Fred. That's helpful. All right, well, I think we're going to have to look into this and try to get like some more people involved, particularly the Dysmorphology Corps. And so maybe I'll badger people for more examples or ask specific questions. And then,
for what it's worth, I had been in touch with Ken Jones, and he emailed me at the time that he felt that it made complete sense to him that the site-specific, that the PIs would be included given their involvement.
Yeah, there's been some... I got a thing of, about a group authorship possibility. I think we'll have to have another conference call about this topic and maybe try to get some examples that I can send out to everybody, looking at both approaches. Maybe we could ask some external editors their feelings about it, and just have more information, not to establish any policy. And but can we get an agreement that we are going to figure out a way to resolve this and get people to enter the data into the database?
Hopefully
I think we have to agree on this. You know, I mean, that's the idea. That's why
publication agreement that none
really
of this data
would
have been
a year and a half. Publication agreement really should have been resolved a year and a half ago, you know, at the onset of the project, because people
have
moved
but it
ahead
wasn't.
With
but
certain
the problem
expectations
is that none of this
and assumptions.
It would have been collected without the CFAS project and funding. And
sorry, say that again, Ed. I didn't hear you.
None of these data would have been collected without this collaborative initiative. And so the collaborative initiative really should take precedent right now. And if we can agree that we're all civil and reasonable enough that we're going to work out a policy, if we can start getting the data into the database, because, you know, I just think that if we have knowledge and we're not trying to do something with it, that's just not right. I mean, too many people have invested too much time in trying to get this along. And our chances of getting refunded, unless this data gets in there and starts to be analyzed, are absolutely zero. So we can decide that we're going to, you know, take the approach that, look, we're going to work this out one way or another. It may be difficult at times, but it's going to happen, and everyone appreciates everything that everybody has done. No one's out to screw anybody else. And, you know, we can all be big about it and get the data into the database so that we can at least start to make an attempt to get a paper. Is there any dissension about that? So can I get kind of an agreement that we all promise to get the data into the database so that we don't have to work this out over the next 3 months and then have the data in, get entered? Hello? Did I lose everybody?
No, but it's really if all data is in the database, you then and you don't know what to do.
I know. I'm going to ask people to trust me. okay? Mm-hmm. I'm just going to ask people to say, okay, we're going to work it out, but let's try to get the data in. Because if the data doesn't get in, there's no. You can add five more papers onto your publication list. We're not going to have any funding to continue it. At least, I mean, that's my take. Unless we show the utility of this approach, this project, the last check was already written by NIH for this. We got our third year funding. There's not going to be another year of funding. This is it. It ends now unless we start getting papers out. I think this is a useful approach. I think I was just in South Africa. I mean, everything looked great. Things were working well. I've been in Finland where I know that the data are good. I know a lot of effort and work has gone in there under very trying circumstances because of the rise in the euro and funding and everything else. So I know all of those things exist. But if we don't get something going with these data, it's all been for naught. So I guess we need to decide whether it's worth having a little trust and a little faith that no one's going to go in and steal anyone's data and do anything bad with it without, you know, having a group come together and make a decision. But if it doesn't get in there, it ain't going to happen. So that's my plea, is that we think about the knowledge that we might be able to impart and try to advance science in some respect.
Well, Ed, I couldn't agree with you more. This is Anne speaking.
Thanks,
but
Ed.
What you're saying just doesn't apply to our pilot study. But
no, if it doesn't apply, I mean, we've collected data in San Diego that I'm not going to, you know, put in the database. It's not related to the consortium, but the consortium data we're entering. Well, I guess I'll just leave it up to each individual to make their decision.
Sandy from the Informatics Corps, was there any application specified in the grants that data needed to be shared?
Yeah, the data all belong to NIH. From my understanding.
Let me modify that. No, the data do not belong to NIH. The data belong to the data belongs to the individual investigators. But as part of the terms and conditions of the award, it is agreed that it is shared among all of the consortia participants, and the next stage is that it's made available to others under NIH data sharing policy. But at the initial stage, each of the individuals in accepting the grant award that you accepted, you agreed to share it with all of the other individuals in the consortia. That's in the terms and condition of award, but NIH does not have ownership of it.
Yeah, and sharing is something else than just giving away. Sharing is truly that you share how the data is being analyzed, how it's being written and so published and so on.
Everybody, and you can do whatever you feel.
Hey Ed.
Yeah.
Is there a way that people can be notified when their data is being downloaded for use? So like if somebody's starting to work on the imaging data, you know, the facial imaging, from my perspective that I know, because in case I'm trying to work on something similar, I guess I don't want the overlap. I mean, are everybody going to be contacting each other, communicating with each other on this? Or
Andy, is there a way that can be done?
Let's see. How are we? I'm just thinking out loud here about how we're tracking attribution of individual parts of data. We know who has uploaded data, but on the other hand, in many cases, who uploads it isn't who collected it. We know the name of the. Sorry, we know the from the global ID which project that data has come from. Right. So we could potentially set up a system where anybody who's using download page, whenever they request anything that has a global ID from your project, the head of the project gets notified. I'm not sure how that would get back to, say, the 3D facial imaging core. And you'd also have to prepare yourself for the fact that people are just browsing around, then you get a lot of notifications.
Can you email me when a page is downloaded with the global ID site so that I could notify the PIs that their data has been downloaded by so-and-so?
Okay, as long as we're clear with that downloaded could simply just mean that somebody has gone and browsed the
site. Right.
And just looked at it online. They may not have actually downloaded it to their computer and done something.
Is there a way to find out when they've downloaded it to their computer?
No.
No.
That's
I mean, so there's no save command that you could monitor?
No, there's not. It's something they're doing on their computer, and we don't have access to that specifically.
All right,
simply
well,
using the report tool to generate a set of data.
And if it's even browsed, let me know, and I will, with the global IDs, of, and I'll just tell her. Or maybe we should have some mechanism to monitor or who signs on to browse it. And,
I'm not sure that. I think that may be a little bit of overkill. Again, I'm just going by the experiences of the other consortia IEEE has had since 1989, and again in COGA and in MATCH and in COMBINE. When anyone gets an interest in doing an analysis, that it's part of the procedures that they just let other individuals know.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody's going to take the facial images and start doing something with them, they would notify me or?
Yes, for sure.
Okay.
Because you also have to give them the opportunity, to give you the opportunity to come in on the analysis.
Okay.
I mean, it's your date, you're the person who has the expertise in that area.
Well, I'm more worried, if somebody comes in with the expertise also and decides.
Yeah.
Yeah, do something else with it.
Yeah. But at this stage, it's not in the public domain. It's only open to the consortia members.
Right.
So if somebody in the consortia is going to do a correlation of, let's say midfacial hypoplasia with performance on numerosity, that they, the person who has the numerosity data who wants the midfacial hypoplasia will go ahead and, contact you.
Andy, is there a way that if someone wants to download or to browse data, that they would have to email first and be sent a one-time type local password, and then we could monitor who was looking at what and let the sites know?
COGA does not have that protection. Theirs has worked for 15 years under an honor system, and it's worked.
They also publish with a few authors, though, okay.
COGA does usually limit the number of, well, put it this way, the way that COGA works is they invite people on, a person who comes up with an analysis notifies everyone that they're interested in undertaking a particular analysis, and then those individuals that are interested in joining them, join them. So you may have only, even though COGA has, clearly more investigators than CFAS does, you may only have four or five people coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they'd be coming in to do a particular analysis off of the population.
All right, so any other ideas about the downloading of the data and how to contact people that their data is being looked at?
We could at least start with a general agreement that it would be polite to let other people know if you're working with the data.
Yeah. Everyone agreed?
Can you say that you don't let people to do? Is it general so that you can't do anything about if somebody wants to look at your data so they can do it? Is it just information or is it also asking that, can I do it? If you understand my question.
Yeah, no, I think before anyone starts to develop a hypothesis and analyze data for that respect, they need to let everybody know what their plans are.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll get that out in an email.
I liked what Ken said, and then invite people if they're interested.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty, is there, I will try to summarize, well, you'll have the verbatim, but I will try to get out some additional questions, and if people can send me examples, that would help, and try to put together a little statement about, maybe Andy, you can put together a little statement about data access, and I could send that out to everybody.
What sort of statement are you looking for?
Just about that no one's going to be analyzing things without, you know, getting permission from, or not permission, but letting sites know what their questions are, and if this is...
And inviting people to join them.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why you want that to come from me.
Oh, I'd
like, Ed, you should be able to do
I'll
that.
I'll do that. I just thought maybe the informatics core had experience with that. But all right, not a problem. And I'll just trust that everybody uploads data when they feel that they can.
I wouldn't mind. I don't know if you were wrapping up the agenda or not there, Ed.
No, go ahead, Andy.
I wouldn't mind taking a couple minutes just to let you know the status of the software that we've been writing. Let me,
Alona. I don't know whether you want to stay on for this or not. I know that it's late and you're paying a lot of money for this call. So these are available online that you can hear about any updates that you may want to.
Okay, great.
Could I ask one question before?
Yeah.
Have you heard any more about, you said that there may be some funding for pilot studies?
Yeah, it's still under negotiation. So that's about all the news I have.
You mean for existing pilot studies?
For the new pilot studies.
The applications that went in June.
We had asked to...
Right, the ones that went in June. Those are the ones you're talking about?
Right. You know, we had agreed that we'd take the pilot money and use it for the basic science projects. And then I negotiating with NIH for to try to get some pilots funded. So that's where we still stand.
Oh, well, that's good to hear they're still in the works then.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect...
Heard anything about it.
I wouldn't expect too much too soon.
Okay.
All right. All right, any comments or questions for Alona before she leaves? And I hope your winters aren't starting too early.
No, it's beautiful sun, and sun is shining, and the first snow came just yesterday, so it's beautiful.
Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks or so.
Okay.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. Andy?
I think this will be quick. I just wanted to say that, like the dysmorphology data, which we've been able to collect for a while, we think we are ready to collect the alcohol and control data. That hasn't been tested in the field. We haven't actually received any data yet, so it'll be interesting to see what happens when people start actually uploading data. The same is true of the 3D facial imaging. And Elizabeth, glad to hear you and looking forward to working with you on that. When it comes to the neurobehavior data, there's two components that we think are extremely close to being released. One is the access database that projects will use at their project to input their data, and then the other is the central repository component of it where you'll be able to upload the data to our servers as well as make selections of data. And the access database is finished with a small caveat that of the 7 import programs we wrote for it to read in data from tests that are actually administered through a computer interface. One of them, we're still working on a little bit of a bug. And Sarah and a woman who works with her, Kim, have been working with us on an almost daily basis to get those tested as we get the bugs worked out. For the central repository, we are well on our way to being done. Large portions of it are finished. For those of you who haven't looked at it closely, the neurobehavior data actually consists of 18 separate tests that encompass more than 1,000 different variables. So we've worked out the entire architecture, and we've worked all the way through the architecture for 10 of those tests so far. For 8 of those tests, and we have 10 more to complete. Our target date for users to be able to upload their data is November 11th, and I feel a very high confidence that we'll be able to meet that date. That's our status.
Great. Any other comments? Anyone? I know we've been going on for over an hour, but South Africa, a number of people on this call were there, and it's very impressive, and I think there's lots of things that can be done there, and I was very impressed by the whole thing. And I know Elizabeth was there, and Sandy and Joe and Ken.
Yep, right.
Anything else?
Elizabeth, did you get all your pictures?
Yes, I got 186, so yes.
186?
Yes.
Wow.
Is that from the R Cape Town site?
Yes.
Okay, and people are now trained up in South Africa for both Phil's project and Sandy's project?
Well,
we did our cohort.
Yeah.
So you're done with the...
But Phil's people were not trained, no.
All right, so Phil's people did not get trained?
No.
They didn't... Oh, Elizabeth, you talk.
Phil was not interested in getting the in the 3D camera work.
South Africa?
Yep. I spoke with him about that.
Well, then, can we just bring the camera back?
That's a point, unless it's going to be used there in the future, but there's no protocol right now for it. But if we do have a protocol in the future, that's one of the things that we could do. But in any event, the people are... Elizabeth, you trained the people at FAR?
Trained our staff.
Yes. Mandy was trained.
Yeah, Mandy.
Yes. Staff.
And she's going to take a couple that were missed. So, but the camera from Finland is on its way back right now.
Right.
So we have a camera going to be here ready to go anywhere. We have about total 650 images right now.
We had we took the last of the two, Elizabeth, that were missing, and so we're ready to send the camera back.
Okay, that's the South African camera. I think it bears going ahead and double checking with Phil to make sure I understood him correctly.
I will.
Okay, so to find out because some that may just have been the intention at that point in time. In other words, you may not have just been planning to do it at that time.
Right. All right. Well, I'll check.
If you can check with him on that.
I will. All right. Any other? Thanks, Sandy. I just got your 150 author paper. that must take up a whole page of your vita.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I only put.
Actually, you know, what happened with that paper is there were sort of three levels to the authorship. They had the five major PIs who are what's generally used if you're just doing a PubMed kind of quick thing or a CV. And then the actual paper itself had, I think it's like 50 or 60 different authors. And then at the end, it just says Human Genome Consortium.
Oh, yeah. All right, so it published as a group. That's why they're alphabetical after the first our first three.
So I think my name got in as part of that final statement. There was a little asterisk that you went to another page and it was filled with just names.
Oh yeah, you're not on this page.
Right.
So yeah, and they're after the first three, they're alphabetical.
Yeah, sorry, three, not five. That's right.
All righty, and that was published in Nature, though. You can't beat that. I noticed, however, there are a number of comments. I just wonder if I'm any of them around that, the authorship, but.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, they're not making fun of it, Andy. All right, so anything else? I'll check with Phil on the camera. And there, because, I mean, it was his intention to do it.
Yeah, but I think you ought to go ahead and check. But my understanding was that it was his intention also. But when I spoke to him there, it really didn't sound like, you know, he may have just been overwhelmed at that time because of everything they were doing at that point in time.
Okay.
He told me at the time, I asked him, he said the same thing, Ken, that unless he gets new funding,
But you're paying for Mandy?
Yeah, Mandy's on our staff. That's right.
It's on your, okay. So, but
it's not only our staff, but she's on our other study as well.
Okay, she's on the imaging study.
Right.
But
she's actually only 20% SciFeds.
Only 20% SciFeds and what, 80% then on
yep.
on the imaging?
On our other
right.
study,
right.
Yeah.
But if Phil needed some help.
There was someone else over there who was then trained on the camera other than her?
No.
If Phil identified someone, would you be willing to have Mandy train him?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is I asked him, he said at this point he didn't have funding to do a whole
I knew about
collection of data and bringing in subjects and having, you know, that this was a, he
yeah, I knew about
what a
the
major
funding.
Thing that is.
Yeah, I knew that the funding was continued, but so, all right, if he gets the funding, I think he's probably going to want to use it. So, all righty. Anything else? Well, thank you very much, and any questions, things, just email away. I'll get them. Thank you for everything, and have a great day.
Bye.
Bye, all.
Bye, Ed.
This is a noisy office.
Yeah,
the hearing aids are pulling out the mowing, mostly.
They were...
We need a quieter room for a conference call if I'm going to be involved.
Oh, I'm really sorry.
Oh, I just didn't realize.
Your
office is on the same wall here. We need something.
No. It's got two windows that face the street. My office.